What will God do if we refuse His commission to go to the world and spread the gospel? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Paul Dibdahl, host and study guide author for this 13-week series on mission. I'm joined today by two colleagues and friends from the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, Dave Thomas and Brant Berglund. Thank you both for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
So, in our last week's lesson, we talked about the Great Commission. Jesus sends his disciples out into the world to make disciples. And, he sends his disciples to make disciples. But what if we refuse that? What does God do then?
We have examples in the Bible of people who ran from the call and people who were resistant. Two names very quickly, Jonah and even Paul. Although Paul was resistant for a bit, Peter, it took a while for him to figure out that his mission was outside the bounds of his own people in the right way. He had dealt with some racial bigotry.
So looking at some biblical examples. Yeah,
you know, I think that when you refuse a commission like that, you suffer harm yourself, first of all. I think that there comes a sense of distance from God, and I don't think that God writes you off necessarily. I have known people who the Spirit circles around and comes to them again, and then they say no, and it circles around and comes again. But I think there are some personal loss. I think there's also some missional loss. But I don't think God abandons people except when their resistance becomes extreme.
Okay.
And persistent.
Okay. So God doesn't abandon them. Does God force? And I think I'm going to stir the pot here just a little bit. Missiologist Ralph Winter, he had a rather influential article that he wrote a number of years back. It's called The Kingdom Strikes Back was the name of the article. And he suggests that ideally God's people would respond to the commission voluntarily, right? Jesus sends us out and that we would obey that we would go. But he says that there's a second possibility, and that is that when God's people fail to share the gospel with the world, God may, and I'll use my language here, sort of force connections between his people and the nations. Now, this could come through persecution and resulting dispersion of his people, overthrow, and then captivity in other nations, right? So if you won't go voluntarily, I'll allow you to be sent there as a captive, or even the unwanted conquest and settlement of foreigners in one's own land. So you might be taken to their land, or they might come to you and not on friendly terms, right, in conquest. How do you feel about that? Is that what God is doing if his people don't voluntarily go?
Well, I've already mentioned Naaman so far in our studies, and maybe now's a time to say, how did Naaman hear about the opportunity to be healed by the God of Israel? He heard from a captive girl, right? A captive Israelite girl. Did God send her there specifically to minister and be a missionary, or was this God will use that way, but God wouldn't intentionally use war? Does God deal in the business of the dispersion of nations? Is that his plan?
I'm uncomfortable with what this man said, that God designs to do this kind of thing. I think I resonate a lot more with what you said, Brent, that I think that God takes the brokenness of humanity and brings something useful out of it. I do think sometimes destruction comes to groups of people and to entities that abandon God. I don't think that's God saying, well, I'm going to break you up so you can become missional. I think that it's one of the consequences that accrues to people who walk away from God. I mean, I think of what Paul said in Romans 1, that when you subvert the word of God, you enter this downward spiral into darkness. It doesn't mean you don't worship anything. It means that you begin worshiping worthless things.
Or that which is just like you.
Yeah. And your society loses its moral structure and its purpose and it falls apart.
And when that happens, God needs to give you up. That's Romans 1. He gives you up. And what happens? You end up in the other nations. But then can God still use you there? Yes, he can. Yeah. He still can. Daniel and his friends who end up in captivity have a incredibly positive influence on Babylon, right? Mm-hmm. And even the prophets pray for Babylon and pray for those who persecute you, because as they prosper, you will prosper, and there's still a chance. God doesn't give up on us even when he lets us go, and we still have a chance. Esther, right? Huge opportunity for the salvation of her people.
But when you look, for example, at the evangelization of Europe, and I always chuckle about Europe because we always think European civilized people, you know. But if you go back far enough, they were rough customers, you know. And unbelievers, they were marauders.
Barbarians,
yeah, barbarians. I reminded the church the other day, I was preaching there, that they were all descended from barbarians. They had a good laugh. But what changed them? Well, when the Roman Empire collapsed, what was left as a core was the Christian church. And that as people spread around, eventually the coming together of Greek philosophy and the biblical worldview formed what we today know as the Western world. So I don't think God necessarily creates those adverse circumstances, but I think he is quite capable of using them for benefit.
I thought of – it was Joseph, wasn't it, who said to his brothers, you sold me, but God sent me. Is that a paraphrase of his? So I'm maybe just – continuing to stir just a bit. And I'm actually going to read a passage. This is thought-provoking. Go ahead, Dave.
I preached a sermon once entitled "A Life Where Nothing Went Wrong." It was the story of Joseph. And it's because of his closing statement. You intended me harm, but God has sent me ahead of you.
So this is Ralph Winter. And again, since we haven't solved it here, we'll let the listeners grapple with this this kind of statement. And I'm quoting now from Winter. He said, no wonder and he's talking about the time period in history right when the savages from the north come and – anyway, I'll just read it. It's self-explanatory, I guess. No wonder – quoting now – no wonder the Anglican prayer book contains the prayer, from the fury of the Northmen, O Lord, deliver us. Once more, when Christians did not reach out to them, pagan peoples came after what the Christians possessed. And once more – the phenomenal power of Christianity manifested itself. The conquerors became conquered by the faith of their captives. Usually it was the monks sold as slaves or Christian girls forced to be their wives and mistresses who eventually won these savages of the north. By the way, that's my heritage, are these savages of the north.
Mine as well, Vikings.
Yep. In God's providence, their redemption became more important than the harrowing tragedy of this new invasion of barbarian violence and evil, which fell upon God's own people whom he loved. And then this close, I find personally thought-provoking. After all, he spared not his own son in order to redeem us. Thus, again, what Satan intended for evil, God used for good. So maybe that's the end quote now. Maybe, Dave, that kind of circles back to the point that you made, and in some ways Brandt, I think, was making as well. Whether God is, what shall I say, actively orchestrating this, or whether God somehow creates a symphony out of all these disparate, messy human failures.
Well, Paul, think about the covenant that's written down in Deuteronomy there, 28, 29, 30. That one of the statements was that if you abandon this covenant, a foreign nation will overrun you. Mm. So, I mean, I don't see this as this may be a reflection of that dynamic. Mm.
But I also see a sense in which God in his mission to the world is undermining the difficulties that Christians will face and the power structures of the world. You know, one of your questions is whether I'm comfortable with God using military expansion and persecution for missionary purposes. Well, persecution has a missional purpose in my own life, right? And why would I seek to avoid it then if it will produce in me a character like Christ? So what Satan intends for evil, and people, evil people mm-hmm. might intend for their own pleasure, God uses for his good, and that's yeah. exciting.
It is an old saying that times of prosperity in a culture are for the church times of adversity, but times of adversity in a culture are for the church times of prosperity, because your religion has to shine, otherwise it's useless.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask a rather personal question here. Can you think of times in your own life when God, I won't use the word forced, but where God led you led you into a situation you didn't desire, but in retrospect you can see that it was for a greater, even salvific purpose? Either of you be willing to reflect for a moment on that personal question.
One very quick example, and it's one of the biggest in my life. I received a call to ministry from Walla Walla University College back then to go to Alaska, and I'm from Central California. Alaska was off my radar. I had no idea what I was getting into. It was the only call I received, so I was going to take it, but I was scared. I was unsure. I didn't know that I was equipped. Ended up being a tremendous blessing in my life, and I hope in many of the people's lives to whom I was able to minister, and they to me.
Called to the foreign land of Alaska.
It's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can look at several assignments that I was faced with that at first I trembled about and wondered if it was advisable, including my own journey here to the university. But when you step up and take on a mission under what you believe is the guidance of God, he enables you to perform it.
Yeah.
And those end up being good occasions.
Yeah. Even a difficult calling or a difficult assignment, like you said, can be, with God's guidance, can be a great blessing.
How about you? Could I ask, Paul?
Yeah, so I'm so focused on trying to direct questions.
Turn the tables on him, Brent. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. You both answered sort of career-wise, and I'm going to not be real specific here, Brent, but I think of difficult people that I felt I needed to somehow maintain connection with or reach out to, people that I didn't want to spend time with necessarily, and yet those associations, although not always comfortable, I can look back at my life and I'm grateful for those. Those were times not just of me, helping someone else, but where I myself was blessed.
I think that's a very good example. I can think of some of those too.
So I know we're running out of time, so a 5-second response. Which is easier, to witness to your family or to a foreigner?
Depends what you mean, but I would say often the foreigner, because you have less invested initially.
Okay. Dave, someone who's familiar or someone who's...
Look, to be loved is a great thing. To be known and still loved is a much greater thing. Mm. So my answer is, I think, to witness to a foreigner. Your family knows you well.
All right. Thank you, Brant Berglund and Dave Thomas, my conversation partners today. Thank you also to Rick Baskett and Naomi Cueto. They are our programming engineers. And finally, to all our listeners, thank you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.